Welcome back to the Deep Dive.
Good to be back.
Today, we have a mission, and I think this might be one of the most profound expansions of art we've ever talked about.
It's a really revolutionary idea.
It's the concept that you, the person listening right now, are the artwork.
Yeah, and that idea just throws out every rule we think we know about art, about galleries, museums, the whole market.
And it really all seems to start with one kind of overlooked quote from the conceptual artist Joseph Beuys.
That's the one. It's the whole catalyst.
Exactly. So, it's 1983. Beuys is on an Austrian TV talk show. It's called Art or Swindle.
Great name for a show.
Right. And he's famous for his felt hat, his vest. And someone in the audience just asks him, point blank, when are you going to take the hat off?
And his answer is just, it's staggering.
He says, I myself am the artwork at this moment. That means it should come to the point that the human being himself becomes the artwork.
And what's so critical to understand here is that this is so much more radical than his more famous idea, you know?
Yeah.
Every person is an artist.
Right. If every person is an artist, they do something. They make art.
Exactly. But if every person is the artwork, it's not about what you create. It's about your fundamental existence, your being.
So this is a total revolution. A takeover of art by every person, as our sources put it.
Yeah, not just for painters or sculptors. This is for the sanitation worker, the nurse, the farmer.
Anyone.
Literally anyone could be considered the ultimate art object. And that has huge political stakes.
How so?
Well, if every single human is fundamentally a work of art, their intrinsic value just skyrockets, right? It doesn't matter what your job is, what your status is.
It's a kind of mechanism for democracy, then. For human valuation.
In an age where that value is constantly being questioned. But you can imagine the art world isn't exactly jumping up and down about this.
No, it's a little hard to sell an art concept that includes 7 billion people.
Precisely. The sources we read suggest they'd prefer to just, you know, put a cloak of silence over it. It completely dismantles the market.
Okay, so let's unpack how we even got here. Beuys was always very precise with his words.
There.
He said everything can become art, especially things that store energy. That includes people.
Yeah.
So was history already sort of paving the way for this?
Oh, it was. And it's a really clear, logical progression when you look at it.
So where does it start? Duchamp.
It always starts with Duchamp, doesn't it?
Yeah.
1913, he declares his ready-mades, just everyday manufactured objects, to be art.
Simply because he said so.
Right. And that simple act moves the center of art away from how an object looks to the artist's concept. The idea.
And once the concept is the art, the next logical step is to turn that idea onto the artists themselves.
And that's exactly what happened. In the 60s, you have the Fluxus artist Ben Vautier. He declared that everything is art that you can sign.
So what did he do?
He signed himself. He literally made the artist into the canvas.
Then you get Wolf Fostel, who takes it even further.
Yeah, with art is life. Life is art. The boundaries just, they blur completely. He's implying that the human being just living could be the art.
But the most explicit precursor, the one who really just went for it, has to be the German artist Tim Ulrichs.
Yes. This is where it gets incredibly literal and fascinating.
Way back in 1961, he makes this declaration. He calls himself the first living artwork.
He didn't just talk about it. He did it. Yeah. He made the conceptual leap physical. In 1965, he actually exhibited himself inside a glass box.
Presenting his body as an aesthetic object.
And his commitment to this is, I mean, it's designed to provoke the sources talk about his tattoos.
This is wild. He had the end tattooed on his eyelid.
A literal target on his chest and on his lower leg.
By Tim Ulrichs.
It's a total permanent commitment to turning his living, complex self into a defined, an object.
Wow. So while Ulrichs is objectifying himself, you have Piero Manzoni in Italy doing something else.
Right. In the same year, 1961, he's looking at how the viewer could become the artwork.
Through his base magica, the magical pedestal.
Exactly. Any museum visitor could just step onto it, and for that moment, they were a living sculpture.
So the simple act of stepping on a box elevates you from spectator to art.
But he went even further. He had this exhibition, Sculpture Viventi, where he would actually sign people's bodies.
And this is where they start running into, like, the bureaucracy of being art. He had stamps.
Three colored stamps. And this is where it gets really interesting about defining the nature of this human as art.
Okay, so what were they?
If you got the red stamp, you were a complete artwork until you died. A permanent objectification.
Whoa.
The yellow stamp meant only the part of your body he signed was art. And the green stamp, that was temporary. It was tied to a specific action, like kneeling, or eating.
It's amazing how quickly you get into the weeds.
Yeah.
Which brings us to the biggest philosophical puzzle in all of this.
Right.
If we're all art, who's the artist?
Yes. Who is the creator? The sources give us three really compelling possibilities, and they force you to totally redefine what creativity even is.
Let's start with the most abstract one.
Okay, so possibility A is that the spectator, the betractor, is the conceptual artist.
The viewer.
The viewer. In this idea, the art is created entirely in their mind, in their spirit. They're the one who decides that person right there is art.
So the instrument isn't a paintbrush.
It's their brain. The thought itself is the act of creation.
But hold on, how is that different from just judging something? You know, I look at a sunset and say, that's beautiful, or that's art. It doesn't make me the artist.
The difference, according to the sources, is in the active decision to elevate a human subject into that aesthetic category. You're not just analyzing them, you are conceptually completing them as art in your mind.
So the act of recognition is the creation.
It is for possibility A. So what about the person being viewed?
Right.
That's possibility B. The human as art is their own divine creator.
Okay, so the person themselves is the artist.
Yeah. They compel others through their life or their work or just their sheer presence to see them as a complete work of art, a Gesamtkunstwerk.
Like Leonardo da Vinci or Goethe, people whose entire lives are seen as an artistic achievement.
Exactly. And then there's the third option, which is the one that asks for the biggest leap of faith.
The one with the most uncertainty.
Possibility C, the artist is absent.
So, the art exists, but we don't know who made it.
The judgment that a person is art is totally valid for the person viewing them, but the identity of the creator, it's unknowable. It could be their own psyche, God, destiny. We just have to live with that uncertainty.
And that idea connects directly back to Bibi's big concept.
Social sculpture. Sociale plastic.
Right. The idea that our thoughts and our words and actions all shape the world around us.
And if we take this human as art idea, we have to introduce a new term, private sculpture.
What's that?
That's the internal thought. That's the moment in your mind where you decide to see a specific human as art. And once you have that thought,
it has to change how you interact with them.
It can't not. It fundamentally alters your attitude. The sources argue this is the mechanism that forces you to have the highest respect for all people, no matter their background.
It's a perpetuum mobile of respect, a constant engine.
That's the source's justification, that this personal aesthetic choice could solve real-world problems of conflict and bias.
That's a powerful claim.
Yeah.
But if the idea is so important, why didn't Booz himself push it more? I mean, did he just sort of postpone his own revolution?
The sources suggest he ran into a lot of resistance. He was quoted saying that most artists and critics, they don't want to fight for a new understanding of art that deals with everyone's work and everyone's problems.
And he complained about the galleries.
Oh, yeah. He said they only care about business. And this concept, well, it's an unmarketable revolution that challenges the whole economy of art.
And besides the economic pressure, there's also an issue with the specific words he used.
A huge one.
The distinction between artwork and art.
This is so important. The German term Kunstwerk, artwork, it implies something finished, material, closed off, like an object in a museum.
And if you apply that to a living person,
you risk reducing a complex, changing subject into a static object. Even Beuys himself contributed to this, talking about his hat and vest as the theater with the hat. He was objectifying himself as an artwork.
Trapping himself in a fixed definition.
Exactly. But the other term, the broader term, art, or Kunst, that's so much better for the human in itself. This dynamic, evolving subject, it's an open process, not a closed object.
And here's the real tension in the story. Because later, in that exact same 1983 interview, Beuys seems to back away from the most radical version of this idea.
He does. He clarifies. He says, I am only indicating a direction of development that potentially every person can participate in this realization of making the world a work of art.
That changes everything.
It really does.
It's just from you are the artwork back to you are an artist who participates in making the world.
It's a step back, maybe to make it more digestible. I don't know. But the core idea, the human as art, it was out there. And if we accept it, we need better language for it.
Right. New labels that don't objectify people.
The sources propose a few. They suggest flesh art, which is pretty direct in relation to the body.
Or subject art.
To really emphasize the person's character versus being a traditional object. Those terms define the what.
But the one that really seems to capture the democratic potential is discursive art.
That's the most important one, I think. Discursive art highlights the conversation, the debate.
The democratic core.
It focuses on the discussion about what or who is art. It implies a trust in every person's ability to decide that for themselves. The art becomes the conversation itself.
Which leads to this really powerful philosophical conclusion, the axiom.
Yeah.
Can a person just refuse? Can they say, no, I'm not art?
The sources argue, no, the human cannot not be art.
Why not?
Because you cannot not decide what art is, and you cannot not create art just by living. And as this constantly changing subject, you're always more than human once you're seen under that umbrella of art.
It's pure emancipation, then.
It is. It takes art away from the market, from institutions, from critics. That individual thought of seeing someone as art is a personal sculpture that always, always impacts society.
So art isn't dead.
It's just waiting for us to recognize where it's always been inside the individual human.
Okay, so let's pull back to history for a second.
Yeah.
If we accept this framework, what does it do to, say, famous historical paintings?
It changes their meaning completely. Take the Mona Lisa.
Okay.
The painting is not her. It's not the person. The source calls it an apparition relic.
A snapshot.
An echo. It's an image of a person who was seen as art by Leonardo da Vinci, captured for the rest of us.
And her famous enigmatic smile.
In this light, that smile could simply be her reflecting the recognition that Leonardo perceives her as art.
She's smiling because, for a moment, her status as a living artwork was acknowledged.
Exactly. Every portrait, every self-portrait, suddenly demands a new reading through this lens.
So this whole deep dive suggests that the real revolution in art doesn't start in a gallery. It starts in your own mind.
And it involves the person you see every single day.
So here's an experiment for you to try.
Tomorrow morning, when you're standing in front of your mirror, just try to accept that you are the complex, constantly changing, definitive artwork.
And see if that little shift in perspective changes how you move through the rest of your day.
Try it. Perhaps you will see someone else in your mirror.
This idea that sculpture, this plastic, can actually change the world.
Mm.
It's all achieved just by the force of your mind. Thanks for diving deep with us.